HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the HD Branch podcast, the weekly companion to your printed copy of HD Branch, where I, your host Karishma Kunzang from Team Branch, give you a behind the scenes of what you'll be reading on Sunday. There'll be interviews with the biggest Bollywood celebrities talking about things that matter to them. You'll also get to know a little more about the columns by Veer Sanghvi and Seema Goswami from the columnists themselves. Why should you listen to it? Well, it's one of India's top Sunday magazines. It has the best editors, columnists, and opinion leaders bringing you what's happening around town. Listen on for an additional dose of brunch. This series is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform. Hi, how's it going?
Jazz. That's a genre I was introduced to pretty late in life when I was in high school and happened to chance across some of it through a friend who went to the same piano lessons as I did. I explored but didn't really find any current scene in India while I was growing up. That is, till I met Arjun Sagar Gupta, Delhi's own piano man and our recent HD Branch star, who's now picked up multiple instruments, almost all if I'm not mistaken. A dear friend whose knowledge about the genre has kept me hooked on many evenings is something that I would like to share with you this International Jazz Day. Stay tuned as the owner of the Piano Man Jazz Club talks about the history of the genre, its evolution in India, and how musicians and venues can help themselves and each other during the pandemic, even as he fights COVID himself.
Hi, Arjun, and welcome to the HD Branch podcast. So since you are the piano man, in Delhi, tell us a little about the birth of the genre, jazz, because it's International Jazz Day, and I couldn't think of no one better who could tell us a little about it.
Yeah, International Jazz Day, this is going to be the first International Jazz Day since 2015 that I don't have anything planned, because, well, I'm
yeah.
And I don't have the energy to sort of do anything. I'm still trying, though. I have one day left. We did this beautiful tribute to Chick Corea a month ago.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to see if I have the energy to edit it into a 40-50 minute show and put that out tomorrow as a special.
Oh, that'll be lovely.
Yeah, it's really, because the stream itself was like 5 hours long.
Yeah.
So a lot of people actually couldn't see the whole thing, but it's amazing. It's got like, it's got Paddy's trio, it's got Ron's trio, it's got, Rhythm's trio, Shanai's trio, Batsal, Biraj, six piano players one after one. So I thought if I could just catch one tune each and put together, that'll be almost an hour.
Yeah.
You know, jazz is tended to be born in New Orleans in the late 19th century. It's actually rooted in the musical traditions that were brought over from West Africa to the US when they sort of carried, Africans at that point as slaves to America to work for the prostitutes in the southern states, especially. And it was obviously a brutal environment for them, and they weren't even allowed education and conversation. Yeah. So to communicate, they used a form of communication called call and response.
Mm-hmm.
While singing in the field. And just long story short, it became one of the core tools of the early development of jazz. So in the mid-1800s, there's a place, we can call it the Congo Square in New Orleans. And that's where, initially they started congregating and holding these small festivals during harvest and all. I think 1865, the abolition of slavery is when, technically there were more opportunities for the freed African American slaves. But again, there was strict segregation and it is very difficult to actually get gainful employment. But a lot of them found work in sort of music and entertainment and, vaudeville, for example. There's some beautiful recordings and stuff from like later vaudeville available mm-hmm. online. And, you know, around this time also, one of the first iterations or variations of early jazz developed, which is called ragtime. That's Scott Joplin is a big proponent of this, and this was late 1800s. At the same time, you know, along the Mississippi, you had these ferries sort of going up and down, and you had, you know, musicians performing on them. You also had a very interesting instrument on the ferry called a calliope. It was wind-powered, the little whistle-sounding keyboard. And that actually moved the music along the, you know, the shoreline. And especially in the original marching band, obviously you couldn't have pianos and stuff, right, moving around.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you'd have, they were actually led by the flute and the fiddle, the violin and the flute. A lot of interesting stories from that period. For example, jazz wasn't actually called jazz till it entered, entertainment. It was called jazz.
Okay.
J-A-S-S. That was the original name. The kick drum originally was played by hand. It didn't have a pedal. That was a later development. A lot of very interesting things from the period, but obviously everything evolves. The other, so you had this one vertical of this call and response and rhythmic syncopation, which came in. The same time, the same African-American also started congregating in churches, and they had their own style of sort of hymnals and spirituals, and a basic form of harmony started coming in from there. So the root of everything comes down to the cotton field blues.
Yeah.
And then it's just verticals of evolution from there. So by the, I think somewhere in the 1910s, you have those original recordings. There was one Nick LaRocca's original Dixieland jazz band. And then you had, I think the first published scores of music were W.C. Handy's blues. In fact, the first album that I heard that got me to jazz was Louis Armstrong performing W.C. Handy's blues. So, it's a rich history. And that's why when people talk about jazz, they talk about it's a heavy history. A lot of us don't realize that. And because not everyone sort of has gone into the depth of history. Mm-hmm. But also then it's just by the nature of the kind of music that it is, in mm-hmm. the sense that it's exploratory, it's free. When it moved around the world, it interacted with different cultures and evolved. So you have, jazz went to South America, in Cuba, you have Cuban jazz, in Brazil, you have Brazilian jazz, and, it's gone to Japan and has a different flavor to it. It's come to, in a lot of microtonal elements into jazz have come from the Middle East and India.
Yeah.
For example, when I interviewed guys like David Kuzinski and all, and mm-hmm. talked about mm-hmm. how their travels and their journeys influence the music. It's interesting, the European jazz movement has its own sort of evolution and sound. It's very interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where are we when it comes to the genre in India at the moment? What's its history been like, and what's its evolution been like, if at all?
Okay. In India, I'd say that the original seed for jazz started maybe in the 50s. Yeah, there's actually a really good resource for people who want to learn more about this. There's a book by Naresh Fernandez called The Taj Mahal Foxtrot. And it's a great read to understand a little bit more about the history of jazz in India. But, I remember stories from my piano teacher in the 60s when Duke Ellington toured India. Duke Ellington being one of the most significant figures in the world of jazz that has ever existed. And he toured India, that's insane. And back in the 60s. And, if you listen to that early Bollywood music, there were some composers who actually were taking influences from bossa nova music. They were taking influences from swing music back then. So obviously the influences had started coming in right up like 50s onwards.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a decent movement. There were some really amazing musicians. Starting from my piano teacher to a vast number of musicians across, vast number for that time across Bombay, Calcutta, and Delhi. Mm-hmm. But I would say somewhere around the 70s and 80s, it started dying out, the movement. Bollywood music also started changing. If you look at that Bollywood song and dance structure, it's very, I think, because I was I was trying to trace where that song and dance culture in the Indian film industry came from. Mm-hmm. And to me, it seems like it's a very direct copy of the MGM musical era from the 30s and 40s. If you go back and watch those Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Gene Kelly movies, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they were, like song and dance. So those were like pure jazz. And this kind of evolved into something else. And the hangover continued till the 90s, you know, in India. So when I became old enough to sort of hit the music scene in this country, I think just after school when, you know, I started performing. So that'd be about 2002, 2003.
Okay.
There were no jazz musicians in Berkeley. Balani Brothers were, I think, on their way to Berkeley or in Berkeley at that time. Yeah. Must have been like two or three other people. I met, you know, I was playing with a different band, a rock setup, something I don't even remember. And I met the drummer of the band, Nikhil Vasudevan, and in the break of our rehearsal, I started playing in whatever broken method that I knew, some jazz standard. And Nikhil's like, oh shit, that sounds amazing. And he started trying to swing to it. And then we found a bass player who wanted to play with it. And then we formed like a little trio. And then that's it. Like, forming a trio took like 6 months because A, we didn't have a strong understanding of the music, and B, there was no way to play and C, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Fast forward to today, there is not just a decently strong community of jazz musicians across the country, but the quality of the musicians is mind-blowing. Yeah. Like, there are musicians in our country that deserve to be nestled in the middle of the best jazz scenes in the world. And I'm so proud of these almost exclusively young musicians. That it's unbelievable, you know. Mm-hmm. We spoke about Ron Shah, you know. You know him. He's such a phenomenal kid, you know. And he's, what, 25, 26 years old. You got Utsav Lal sitting in New York, you know, with his stuffed puppy on top of the piano.
Yeah.
And, man, that guy, his understanding of sound is, I mean, it's on a different league altogether.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and you know, you got Rhythm Bansal, again, 25, 26 years old. Just the lyricality of his playing is just, I mean, you know, we talk about virtuosity in music and people say virtuosity is the ability to play fast. I say it's absolutely not. Virtuosity is the ability to make the audience feel the emotions that you feel. And these kids can do that. Like, it's amazing. It's really amazing. And this is just a few of the musicians, you know, fairly a handful that I mentioned because I interact with them often.
Yeah.
Across the country, you know, there's this Carnatic Indian band, you know, Carnatic jazz fusion band, Jatayu.
Oh, yes.
And they came to play at the club 2 years ago. And I mean, I can't forget them. Like, I talk about them so often because they are stunning, stunning. And one of the very few examples of Indian bands that have incorporated microtonality into music, flawless. Very difficult to do that.
Okay. All right. And what was your idea when you opened a jazz club and decided to open a jazz club in Delhi? And what was the response like initially? And I mean, I know I've been there enough number of times to overpacked houses, and it's still been like phenomenally amazing. But tell us a little about what your thoughts were when you were planning it and you knew that it was going to be called the Jazz Club.
I think I had a head injury or something. When I... no, so there were a couple of thoughts that went through my head. First is that after having spent over a decade performing around you know, the country, outside the country. You know, one of the things that really opened my eyes to what's happening around the world is my, I did a small scholarship in Boston called the NUFACS program. And till then, I thought I was the bee's knees. And the little bit of exposure I got there just completely broke my arrogance and my ego down to a tiny little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge change just to understand where we actually are in the world. Today, it's very easy to know where you are in the world. YouTube and this and that. At that point, I had no, you know, double quote competition in Delhi of, you know, real sense. And there was no community as such, you know. So it was amazing. It was just a beautiful experience.
Okay.
And then when I came, like, obviously when I came back to India, I worked in a lot of different fields. When I entered the F&B industry, one of the thoughts that entered my mind is that how do we create a space which is a conduit for sort of non-commercial, non-mainstream music being presented in a manner which is true to the art of the artist, and is inclusive for everyone involved, the audiences and the artists, gives a space for, obviously, there have to be people who want to enjoy music.
Yeah.
Right? There have to be. Yes. In a city of 20 plus million people. That's just an assumption that we took. And we said, now let's create an environment which is conducive for them, conducive for the artist. Right? So that became like a hypothesis. Can we create a space that is this, all of this?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I chose this non-mainstream sort of method or vertical is because, yeah, Bollywood sunne ke liye to bahut, you know, there's enough opportunity.
Aadha CP hai, pura CP hai, pura Oscars.
Any CP bhi nahi hai na, aap mainstream media bhi to dekho na. You have radio,
true.
You have television, you have in your newspaper advertisements of CCs and whatever, you have, you know, it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, this is how culture works. You promote something, you put money behind it, and it will become acceptable eventually over time as people start acquiring taste for it. You know, exposure is what was lacking completely for jazz, blues, R&B, hip-hop, you know, all of this and independent music.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it the Jazz Club because that's the root and the focus that we took.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, we always also brought on independent artists. We brought on composers and the songwriters. Because the idea was to make it an inclusive space for this non-mainstream community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we more or less stuck to that till date.
Yeah.
The exception that we started making is that on the Sunday matinee shows, we allowed mm-hmm. more sort of folk artists to start coming in as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, just because it's a different time slot, they wanted to perform. And, you know, for me, those Monday to Sunday nights started representing something specific. You know,
yeah.
I didn't want to
yeah.
ideas. We have some really cool ideas for the future where we are converting our clubs into just complete entertainment spaces afternoon to night.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be running multiple shows a day back to back,
mm-hmm.
7 days a week. You know, and yeah, the idea is to how do we take more steps down the road that we started? You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, what is the state of musicians and venues today? How can we kind of all help each other? This is something that we've spoken about earlier. But just to recap, you know, since we're now at wave two.
Status is not good. I mean, even for us, for example, as a venue, we are in extreme financial distress. I don't know how we're holding on, honestly. Like, their expenses every month still. You know, we're borrowing money continuously to pay bills. As soon as those borrowing channels dry up, we're dead. It's a fact of the matter, right? And it's not just us. So many places have already collapsed. So many more will. It's just a survival game right now. Whoever can... Some people have deep pockets. Great. Some people don't and they're borrowing, and that's us. And then there are people who can't borrow and they've already collapsed.
Yeah.
We get calls, like I get messages every day, that you see messages, oh, this place is not available, this place is not available. It's sad. Our industry is devastated, and Piano Man sits on the verge or the edge or the nexus of two severely hit industries, F&B and arts and entertainment. You know, we're very precariously perched on two edges, not just one. And, but that's okay. I mean, that's life. And everyone's in the same boat. So can't complain about it. That's why we are fighting to survive.
Yes.
And we're coming up with newer ideas. We're, you know, we will fight this. We fought for almost a year and a half. We're not going to give up now.
Yeah.
just literally at hopefully what might be the last stretch of the most toxic part of this period. So artists already have such a big problem in monetizing their ability. You know, revenue generation from music historically had a different context. It was the label era till the 90s, end of the 90s, where, you know, there was a little more opportunity and there was a little, to be discovered, and there was opportunity to get, even if you weren't discovered as a Britney Spears or a Justin Bieber or whatever, you still got paid enough money to record an album, because the, you know, the labels had their own studios or they had studios under contract. And in India, it didn't cost them an arm and a leg to record an album. So they would support in some way or the other, you know, this creation of art. They would take more risks and more bets. And it was a more interpersonal relationship, right? You could go and smooth up to a record label producer and, you know, try to get shit done. And then if your album did even decently well, they would back you further. You'd actually make money from your album. So early 2000 onwards, this started changing with first the advent of the, you know, P2P file sharing services, and then it switched over to streaming methodologies. Now, in streaming methodologies, it's a problem because everyone's on the same curve. So you're responsible now more than ever for recording your content. After you record your content, keep putting on a streaming service. The curve is hugely skewed by the big guys. The person who streams 100 million times skews the scale of payments. So you'll have a very small percentage of people taking away 95% of the revenue on the platform. And then everyone else is sharing that remaining 5%, and that everyone else is thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people, right? Hundreds of thousands of people. And so if you are streaming your music, say 30, 40,000 times in a month, which in terms of albums, if you had sold a couple of thousand albums, it would be amazing. Like you'd actually earn, you know, some money. But tens of thousands of streams are a drop in the ocean. You get paid like a couple of $100 or a couple of $1,000 at the end of the year. So how do you make money off your recordings? Now it comes down to all the alternative sources of revenue, which are, you know, live performances, which is shut down. Teaching, which only a certain baseline can do. You have to have a basic skill level to be able to teach. And you have to have built a network. You can't, like, it's very difficult to start. It's very difficult to start afresh in the middle of a pandemic, you know, to start building a reputation with each other. But a lot of young artists that I've been meeting, young, middle, old, in terms of experience, tell them the same thing. I say, what you should be doing right now is building a Patreon page or something of that sort, you know, that sort of a service. Because it'll bring you discipline in content delivery, and you don't need too many Patreons to start with.
Yeah.
To start paying bills. And if your content delivery game is good, then, you know, it just 2, 3, 4 months in, you can actually build a solid, you know, you have 50 people who are paying 300-400 rupees a month. That's 15,000-20,000 rupees a month coming in regularly, and use that money, reinvest, get better, get, you know, go on Amazon, buy some nice soft lights, you know, improve your game a little bit, record a little better. If yes, there's a little bit of an expense. Start, get, depend on friends and family to start supporting you a little bit. Use that money immediately to up your recording game, and then start putting out good content. Be regular with your content. And most of us artists can generate enough money to survive this period. And then later on, it becomes over time, it can become a very, very solid revenue. I mean, big guys like Pentatonix and Jacob Collier and all, they, you know, Amanda Farmer, they use Patreon to devastating effect. I mean, the revenues that build off it is amazing. And that's just a different kind of financial freedom.
Okay. And finally, Arjun, any tips for those who are planning to dive into the genre now, you know, in lockdown, if somebody's maybe developed an interest in jazz and wants to kind of take it up? and you know, experiment with it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, this is the best time to practice. You have nothing else to do. I did the same thing. I picked up the trumpet seriously this time, finally. I bought this trumpet in 2007.
Yeah.
But I picked it up on day one of the lockdown last March. And I've been playing. In fact, in the middle, when we were actually out to run our club for a few months, I was playing it on stage quite often.
Yeah.
Just 3 hours of practice every day for 6 months. It's amazing. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
So you have teachers are available online. Teachers are available globally. There's enough resources online, but there's always, I always recommend having a teacher to start things off. And when you can go in person, go in person. Start. Pick an instrument that you have at home.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, identify the instrument that you like. You know, there are enough people around. I'm always there. People can write into me through the Piano Man email ID. I'm always there to sort of guide people on buying the right instrument. And, start. You can procrastinate your entire life. There's a very nice two books that I recommend for people to read. One is A Grand Obsession by Perry Neese.
Yeah.
P-E-R-R-I, I think. K-N-I-Z-E. And she talks about this. I think in her 30s, I read this book like 15, 20 years ago. But in her 30s or something, she decides to quit her career and become a concert pianist. And it's a really beautiful book about the journey and also the fact that she has perfect pitch and she actually explores different temperaments of piano tuning and stuff. It's a very interesting book, if you're a piano player. The other book is obviously Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, which talks about those 10,000 hours you need to put in to become a master of any skill. And it's true, you need to put in the time. So put in the time. What can I say? Listen to more music, listen to more jazz. The key of building an audience for any art form is exposure. And that's what we've been trying to do for the last few years. And I've seen it work. There's a community today, which I know didn't exist 15 years ago. The listeners were there, but the community wasn't, because the listeners didn't know where the other listeners were.
Yeah.
Some musicians didn't listen to jazz, so they didn't have the exposure to start developing it as one of their favorites. So help promote the music by spreading it. Listen to your fabulous fellow musicians. Follow them in this country, and check out some of the videos globally. And about myself, I'm keeping my spirits up. I'm hoping for a much brighter future. There is no other choice. It's only really the same.
I have been dying to escape to the hills for more than 2 years now. First, I couldn't, get time because of my previous jobs, timings. And then, of course, the pandemic happened. So when I found a 4-day window of relatively less work, I was tempted to run off to Darjeeling, the sights during the long commute from the Baghdogra airport, the short stop for momos on the banks of the River Teesta before you set out uphill, weaving your way up and down till the view of the snow-capped mountains greet you and you know that you've reached Darjeeling. And of course, then there's the food. Breakfast at Coventer's, overlooking the town, lunch at some local place with momos, tea and, of course, cake at Glenry's, a walk along Charasta, and, to walk off everything that we've been eating, and dinner at a Nepali restaurant. All that and some fresh mountain air, which is just automatically refreshing. But I didn't give in to my temptations, given COVID. But had I been in Delhi, I would have definitely driven off, or rather have someone drive me to Manali, Nagar, or even Landau. But I'm in Bombay and I know there's the beach and all, but the heart wants what it wants. Well, here's HT Brunch columnist Veer Sanghvi's take on traveling to the hills.
Doctors tell us that during these terrible times, one way of avoiding COVID is avoiding contact with human beings. And if there is contact, try and do it outdoors, they say. Don't stay indoors. Don't stay in crowded places. Well, there's not a lot you can do outdoors in our big cities. Almost everywhere you go, you come across COVID cases. People tend to be infected. And infection hovers in the air wherever there are people. So one way, if you're fortunate enough, is to get away from the big cities to try and escape the infection and go to the great outdoors. That's not easy to do when the temperatures outside are 35 degrees or 40 degrees. But if you're fortunate enough to live in a city near the hills, then that's an option. Try and go out to the hills. Try and use the great outdoors to your advantage. Try and spend as much time as you can under the trees and in the bushes. Try and eat your meals outside. Try, if you have to meet somebody, not to do that indoors. Try and do that completely far away from crowds. Do that under the skies. How can you do it? It's not easy, I admit. But there's one way. All over India, the British built hill stations. Most of them, unfortunately, are now in states of disrepair and overdevelopment. But the area around the hill stations is still green, is still verdant, is still uncrowded. So if you can, and you're fortunate enough, get into your car, drive out. Go and stay in a hill station. There are reasonable hotels. There are villas for hire. You may have friends with bungalows. Just stay far away from the infection and rediscover the lure of the hills.
I don't know a single person I've spoken to in the last 2 weeks who hasn't told me about someone or the other being down with COVID or even passing away due to it. Even as I speak, people from my own team are down with COVID. But like my boss, Jamal Sheikh, said during our recent edit meeting, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And, you know, that's the kind of inspiration we all need today. I haven't come across a feed that isn't pleading for help. And that sinking feeling of helplessness and, you know, that just threatens to engulf. But I keep that edit meeting in mind, to be honest, and I'm doing whatever I can within my means to help in whatever way possible. As for my own therapy, well, I've done the one thing I've always wanted to do, which is adopt a dog. And so we got home a 2.5-year-old indie rescue who's been keeping me pretty distracted. A sniff of that puppy smell is all the assurance I can afford that all's going to be well someday. How are you coping? Here's how HD Branch columnist Seema Goswami is dealing with things.
When I sat down to write this column, we were waiting for my aunt's COVID result. Now that I sit down to do this podcast, I'm sad to report that she has since passed away. But I guess I'm not alone in this sense of bereavement, this sense of loss. It's everywhere around us. Family members are going down with corona. People are not being able to find hospital beds or even oxygen. It's a bad time all around. But what does one do? Because life has to go on. And even though a sense of weary inevitability has overtaken us all, we still have to deal with this feeling of impending doom. Well, the first thing I would recommend you do is to stop doom scrolling. Even though I'm on Twitter a lot because I'm amplifying requests related to COVID, I try and take time off to do something else to de-stress, either read a book, listen to music, cook a meal. That's really important to kind of recover your equilibrium. But also, if you are worried, then instead of trying to push your worries away, try and channel them into something productive. Join a volunteer group, cook home-cooked meals, and give them to neighbors and friends who have COVID in the family and can't do it themselves. If you can assist people with getting medicines and groceries, make sure you do that. Maybe join the langar in your local gurudwara and help make chapatis. Whatever we do, we have to be positive and try and channel our energies into something constructive, or else we shall all go mad.
It was International Jazz Day this Friday, so I got you the man who's like a walking encyclopedia on the genre, with oodles of good humor to perform a jazz standard for you. Yes, I'm talking about my friend and musician, Arjun Sagar Gupta, who's been my go-to for everything in the music community for years now. I hope you like his rendition of the jazz standard, Love for Sale, where he's playing the piano and singing.
Appetizing young love for sale. Love that's fresh and still unspoiled. Love that's only slightly soiled. Love for sale. We'll buy. Who would like to sample my supply?
young love for sale. Love that's fresh and still unspoiled. Love that's only slightly soiled. Love for sale.
Great Sunday brunch.
The weekend is when you take a break from a hectic week, whether it's work from home or work from work. It's also a day to develop perspective on things by not just consuming news, but also analyzing it by listening to different points of views and figuring out what you feel about it. We hope we've been able to do just that with today's HT Brunch podcast. Feel free to give us feedback and suggestions on HT Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or DM us directly at HT Brunch on Instagram and Twitter. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se. I will see you back here next weekend with another dose of entertainment that keeps things real. Till then, happy brunching, guys.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.